Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 19th, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
These are my favorite shows. I always choose on these days to not get a lot of sleep the night before. Because I know you're going to talk for a long time, and I could, you know, just sort of doze in and out and, you know, pay attention to what's going on when it's important. But you're always traveling and always seeing all these places, and I'm stuck in my cave and finally get to hear about your report up north.
Yeah. So I'll bore you to tears, and then I'll ring the Ante Up classic bell.
Yes.
To wake you up.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, you're time to move on to the next part of the show.
That'd be great.
But no, as I mentioned on last week's show, I was in Chicago. I started this trip actually in Ohio at Hollywood Toledo. Went up to Detroit, all the way into Canada, and then back across Michigan over to Illinois, and then ended the trip in Minnesota. So a lot of cold weather on this trip. You know, I still don't understand why these people choose to live in these places, but it's way too early to be that cold in these places.
Yeah, yeah.
40 degrees in Minnesota when I was there for an outdoor concert. And I wasn't the one bundled up, although people that live there had, like, huge coats and mittens and stuff on. So
wow.
I was trying to be brave, you know. I'm like, hey, they're going to laugh at the little Florida kid for... But no.
Wow.
These people know how cold it is when they stay there, right?
I'm impressed.
But yeah, so first thing is the Detroit area, and I'll lump Hollywood Toledo into that. If folks that live in that area or near there know, they just did a very successful poker tournament series all on their own. Obviously, they have the Hollywood Poker Open coming back there in February, but our good friend Ken Lambert, who's run rooms and been involved in some of the biggest tournaments in the country, is running that room now, and was very happy that he was able to pull off a good series there and get some good momentum for him. So look for Hollywood Toledo to do some more big series, which is good because there's not a lot else up there. Even Cleveland and Detroit aren't doing a lot of tournament series these days. So
yeah.
For folks that anywhere in that area that want to play big tournaments, looks like Hollywood Toledo is going to be your place to play there. Left there and went back up to Detroit, went back to Greektown, and Joe Benardi, who used to be at that room and then left briefly to go down to Louisiana, is back and is making some changes up in that room. And hopefully he'll be doing some Ante Up poker cruises with us pretty soon, too. So that'd be something for our listeners in Michigan to check out. And then I'm sure everybody's happy that I crossed the border. I think I said that in last week's show. Got into Canada and got my first look at Caesars Windsor since we started the company. My brother and I went there years ago for a Packers game. It's just like what I thought was interesting about this room is, you know, you've been to Caesars rooms with me, right?
Sure.
Caesars Entertainment rooms. And a lot of them are World Series themed, obviously, you know, because of that huge brand. Why not?
Yeah.
A lot of them have the big photos of the players, you know, usually the champions, but other players that play in the room, right?
Right.
On the wall. This room is no different than that. But I was playing a tournament there that night for $60 Canadian, which is, I don't know, $190 US now. And I was looking up at the pictures on the wall, and very interestingly, side by side, Howard Lederer wearing his Full Tilt hockey jersey and Annie Duke.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting.
Don't you think at some point they're like, and again, I'm not trying to, you know, trash these guys any more than they've already been through with, you know, Ultimate Ben, Epic, and obviously the whole Full Tilt thing, but it seems like somebody might have said, you know, hey, of all the people in the world, can we swap it out with somebody else? Darvin Moon, maybe? You know? Something a little benign, vanilla. It just seems interesting to me that that's still prominent in some rooms.
Yeah. So it's crazy. I mean, especially because, you know, he's wearing full tilt stuff too, which now, of course, there's nothing wrong with full tilt, but at the time.
And of course, it's Canada too.
And it's Canada.
They didn't have the problems that they had in the U.S. You got to remember that. I mean, I think that's the most interesting thing for me from this trip was that it's literally a mile. I mean, you can like swim across the river if, you know, you could swim faster than the border agents to get from Detroit to Windsor.
Right.
But it really is, I know people are going to laugh at me, it really is a different country there.
Yeah.
It's not at all the same, you know, and a lot of things they do. They did this thing where the dealers, when they put out the flop turn the river, I can't even really describe it, I don't think, without you seeing it. But they would move the car to the left and then turn it over back to the right.
Huh.
You know how you normally just deal it off, you just pick it straight up and put it down, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They would peel it off and then move it over and then turn it backwards. Kind of elegant, I thought, but it seems like a lot more effort. A lot more carpal tunnel, Canadian dealers.
They go the extra mile in the Great White North.
But just the way, you know, people talked and conversed and the players there versus the players I saw in Detroit, completely different, and it's, you know, literally a mile away. Kind of cool, to be honest.
That's cool.
Left there, drove over to Firekeepers, and this is the funny thing is when I travel so much, I talk to poker managers, and a lot of them are like, man, you must have been to every poker room in the country already. And I got to remind them I have not. There's still a couple I haven't seen, and Firekeepers is one of them, and absolutely gorgeous place in Battle Creek. Much like Toledo, it's the only thing around. So if you want to play, you got to play there. And I think they kind of wish they had a little bit more closer competition to kind of build the market, because it's a very interesting thing that, you know, I mean, I'm hearing from some of these managers is that it's much harder to get to convert players into poker players than to convince poker players to play in your room versus another room.
Mm.
And, you know, I kind of got that in Toledo. Also got that in Firekeepers as well. Kelly Bailey's the manager there. We've known her back from when she was in California. Doing great things. The hotel's gorgeous there. And they got the Mid-States Poker Tour coming up next month. And they're doing lots of good stuff there. So I expect to see a lot more out of Firekeepers and hopefully some Antiup stuff. But if you're transversing through Battle Creek, definitely check it out. It's a nice stopover from wherever you're going.
Cool.
And actually a destination, too, if you a nice hotel.
Right.
All right, and then I headed on down to, I'm on the way to Chicago. Popped into Blue Chip, another casino I hadn't been to before, in Michigan City, Indiana. I love these cities that are names of other states. I mean, it's like really right on the border. So, I mean, I wish there was like an Indiana City, Michigan on the other side. That would be really cool. But again, another gorgeous hotel and a lot of potential in this room. They just haven't done much, but they got some new management there that are eager to try to get back on the market, and they certainly can attract some folks from Chicago, can attract some folks from Michigan as well too, where they are, and so that could be a room to keep your eye on going forward. And then, obviously, stopped in Majestic Star again. New competition, as I'll talk about in a minute. Ameristar East Chicago just opened their room. So the Chicago market's getting a little tougher. So Majestic Star has been kicking up its promotions to try to, you know, keep it and bring in new business. Giving away a motorcycle right now, and I think it sounds like this December they're going to give away a car to someone, which is a very nice Christmas gift for someone to win, or Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa, or just a gift, I guess. Right. And, of course, Horseshoe Hammond is the big kahuna there, and are kind of changing up things as well to combat the new kid on the block, which is Ameristar East Chicago. Gorgeous hotel there. I stayed the night. Very nice, very reasonable rooms, and real clean and comfortable, which is great because I think I was telling folks last week about the Travel Lodge disaster that I was in.
Yeah.
So, Ameristar East Chicago, nice place to stay for definitely. But this room, they did a really good job building this room. Now, this room was one of the original Chicago rooms back in the day and then closed for a long time, and now it's back. You know, really comfortable seats there. They have USB chargers at every seat, which I think is going to be the trend now for any poker room that opens to do that, so you can keep your phone charged while you're playing. And really now it's down to just getting players in. You know, obviously it's a tough market and tough to be the kid on the block and getting people in. But they just started doing tournaments. Obviously they had a very successful Heartland in August when they opened, and we'll do another Heartland coming up. But I mean, their big challenge is to get people in on those other times. So keep an eye on them and see what they do. But if you're in Chicago, it's nice to have yet another place to play in it. And then I hopped on a plane, went up back to Minnesota. Our good friends at Canterbury Park are getting up for the Fall Poker Classic next month, which is always their biggest tournament of the year. Their relationship with Mystic Lake, I think it is, casino across the street, pretty much is getting stronger as well, too, which is a good benefit for the players at both properties. And then I finished trip up at our good friends Running Aces, which hosted an Antioch Poker Tour event the last 2 years. I'm going to dominate this cruise coming up in October out of Galveston. They're sending 44 people aboard it. So yeah, that's cool. They're all looking forward to that, too. But the really cool thing there is I was watching them work on their RFID table. So they bought a package from a company, I believe in Australia, they said. And they're going to outfit the table with the RFID, so you know the cards can be read by the computer, and cameras built into it, and it's going to be kind of a standalone table. They can add human interaction to it, you know, so you can do like chip counts and things like that, or they can just flip the switch and let the cameras record the action and broadcast straight to whatever their website they use, and then at the end of it, it automatically uploads it to YouTube.
Wow.
And they're going to use this table every single day once they get it up. They're going to use it for probably their biggest cash game of the day. So it's going to be kind of like a live at the bike, but from Minnesota kind of thing.
Wow.
And then obviously for their bigger tournaments, they'll put the final table there. And obviously probably use the human interaction at that point to make it a little bit cooler. But I think that's going to be pretty cool. As far as I know, I mean, I'm sure there's probably some other rooms out there. Obviously live at the bike is a separate idea, but... this might be the first room I've seen that it's going to use an RFID table daily, and certainly in a market like this that's not, you know, Atlantic City, Vegas, or California that you'd think would have something like this. So I think that's going to be pretty cool. I'm kind of looking forward to watching. I mean, again, I'm not big on these live streams, as I tell people, you know, unless I know who's playing.
Right.
Probably don't have a vested interest because it's not as slick as TV. We kind of get spoiled.
Right.
I think, right, by watching the Poker World Series on TV and how slick it is. But still, a lot of people do like to tune in, so the fact that they're going to have something else to watch, and it could be even, he was even talking about doing it further, they do a weekly free roll tournament there, and put the final table of that, and how cool is that to be able to go play a tournament and be on a live stream for a tournament you didn't pay any money to get into. Calling your wife up and say, hey, check me out.
I was going to say it's pretty bizarre that the computer, you know, it automatically uploads it. It's like there's going to be a computer uprising someday. Where are you going to be when the robots take over, you know? And that's just crazy. That's so cool. It's just, hey, oh, it's all done. Okay, we're going to do this and do that. And it's like, you're not doing anything. The table's doing it. That's bizarre.
The whole reason going to Minnesota, I went to a big awesome hair metal festival up there. In case you're asking, Lito Ford rocked, as did everybody else on the bill. But it's at Grand Casino Hinckley, and we don't have a big relationship with that room. You know, it's pretty far up. It's like an hour and a half north of Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. So I was going to check it out for the first time, and before I went up, I was talking to the manager, and he's like, hey, is that the Grand Casino owns two? And he's like, is that the one at the poker room, or is the other one? I'm like, I think this is it. And so he put this doubt in my head, right? So I get up there, I walked the length of this casino like seven times. I was there for like all weekend, right? And I wasn't specifically looking for the poker room because I was there for fun more than business, but could not find a poker room, didn't see a sign for it anywhere. And I'm like, all right, maybe he's right. Maybe it's the other location, right? Very last night of the concert, they closed off one door and we're coming back in from the amphitheater. Took us a different way. Next to the pool, poker room.
Next to the pool?
Yeah, because you know everybody, when you're looking for the poker room, goes to the pool area, right?
Maybe they arrange their like amenities alphabetically.
There we go. Perfect. I like that. Look at that. Chris made it funny. But it looked as I poked my head in briefly. It's a separate room, which I always like. I always prefer the rooms to be separate. But I also like the rooms to be like off near a traffic area, though, right?
Yeah.
Because that's a big problem that I run into. You see these, like, you know, even if, like, at Horseshoe Cleveland when I went there, you know, one of the big things that every manager that's been there has lamented is that it's a gorgeous room, but you got to go up an escalator, and there's nothing up at the top of there, right? So yeah. You got to actually make the effort to go play poker, whereas if your poker room is on the casino floor or in a heavy traffic area, you're going to get people walk by and go, oh, yeah, poker, I think I'll play. But out of sight, out of mind is really kind of the problem here, and I certainly think that's the case there. I've been there 48 hours and the publisher Poker Magazine looking for a poker room, and I can't find it. That's a problem. Signage, right?
Yeah.
It's certainly a bigger problem for getting players in. But then again, it's really out in the middle of nowhere, so I'm not sure they're attracting a lot of people from. I don't think there's a big tourist crowd there outside of Grand Rock Timber that comes in. So I'm sure the players that play there know where it is. It's not that big a deal, but. But yeah, if you go up there, be sure you ask where the pool is. That's where
the pool is. Oh, we got an interesting email that I want to talk about here real quickly. It comes from Stuart Morgan. And what's the tiniest min cash you ever had, Scott? Do you know?
Oh, boy. You know me. I'm short stack ninja, so almost all my caches have been min caches and all pretty tiny. I'm going to guess the fact that we're talking about this on the show means that I'm not even close to... to beating Stewart here.
I don't even know what mine is. I think mine is like a dollar.
Really?
Yeah, because I think I entered a dollar tournament once and online, and I won. I cashed for a minimum. It was like a dollar. I think I got my money back, so it might have been like $1.01 or something. you know what I mean? I don't know. No, it might have been like $1.10, I think is what it is. Because I think it was like 1 plus 10, and you get 10. I don't know what it was, but I think I won a dollar once. I can't remember. But Stuart wrote in. He's got a pretty amazing story here. It's probably the smallest min cash you could possibly ever get. He said he decided a week or two ago to have a go at replicating Chris Ferguson's famous challenge of making 100 grand from $0 in 1 year. I don't think for a moment I'll get to 100 grand, but I'm confident that I'll make some money and that I'll improve my game along the way. I've managed to get past the most difficult bit, which is having a zero balance, as these days there are many fewer free rolls around than there were, especially on PokerStars. So with a few dollars, I can now play real money tournaments. This led me to the 10-cent plus 1-cent no-limit turbo, in which I have just completed several thousand entrants as ever on PokerStars, and I finished 445th. A cash, I thought. At least I'm building the bankroll a smidgen. I cashed for 0.12 cents. That's 12 cents, 1 cent profit. He said, is this the most pointless payout structure in poker? It's a long way to 100 grand at 1 cent a tournament. That, you can't get any less than that, right? I mean, maybe points. Maybe
I guess
you can
play on seals with clubs and you get a fraction of a Bitcoin that might be less than that. You know,
that's crazy.
But yeah, unless you're doing fractions, as far as I know, there's nothing smaller than a penny.
Half a cent. That's just crazy. Made it 1 cent. So I guess that opens up the whole, what do you consider a cash? Like, there are tournaments that pay you less than what you entered.
Very
two,
few.
Right?
I mean, in fact, interestingly enough that, you know, on this trip I just completed, I played two tournaments, made the final table, both got nothing to show for
right,
it.
Right, right.
Which is kind of my MO, right? But the one who wins there, for the longest time, I was watching the payout thing. And even after, I love when players get all worked up, you know, before the end of registration. Oh, is that correct up there? No, it's not correct. The tournament's still open. Just keep playing cards, and once the tournament's done, then they'll reflect it, right?
Right,
they'll make it right.
Right.
Well, even after the registration was done, it was still showing paying five spots, and they had like 22 players or something like that. So I thought it was a little bit generous that they're paying down five spots, but it was a $60 buy-in, and fifth was $32.
Wow.
And I'm like, all right, well, I guess I should be happy that if I end up finishing fifth that I get some of my money back, but I'm still a loser, right?
Yeah.
So they eventually recalibrated and paid top three, and everybody made, you know, at least twice their buy-in or something like that. But that's the only time I've actually seen it printed on the board less your buy-in. I'm almost certain that everybody these days, you know, pays more than what you got in.
Yeah, I mean,
free buy term is different. You can't promise that, but. So, yeah, unless somebody's going to pay less, I mean, I guess that would be the answer, right? That would be a less min cash, because if you're actually making less than you put in.
Exactly. I mean, it's almost like you have to rephrase what Stewart sent in and say, what's the smallest profit min cash?
Yeah, because, there you go. Yeah.
I mean, there definitely have been events where you only get your money back, too, which means you've cashed, but the minimum you've made is zero. You know what I mean? So profit, yeah, you can't beat that record, 1 cent, unless you're playing in a foreign country where the denominations are less than pennies. And
right,
then,
exactly.
But, I mean, in American money, that's about it. That's all you're going to get out of it. Yeah, that's crazy.
Could be Scotland coming up, depending on how this vote
goes. if they secede. You know, can you imagine Scotland having to defend itself? Have to get, you know, like Mel Gibson over there fighting and stuff?
Well, hey, if I got to have somebody defending me, Mel Gibson.
William Wallace.
That guy takes on marauders and cops with the same vengeance, right?
Don't get me started on Mel Gibson. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we'll do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Anti-Up logo version. Don't forget to use code ANTIUP for free shipping. Comes from Bob Kraft. It says, why do you believe graphics in televised poker are so dull? With all the information available on heads-up displays, you would think they would adopt that analysis for TV. And the first thing I want to say is, Bob, don't be, you know, pigeonholing me here. I never told you that I believed graphics in televised poker were dull.
Well, I don't think he's saying we believe it.
He says, why do you believe it?
That's what he said. Oh, gosh.
I don't believe that, Bob.
We haven't even answered his question with a mediocre answer, and you've already driven him away from the show.
I think it's too much to handle.
Well, yeah, which is funny because, you know, Bob and I have gone back and forth with four or five emails about this, which again, I love. I mean, we had that email discussion I had with a listener a couple of weeks ago, and I love the fact that these listeners are so passionate about this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And don't just take what I write back as gospel. They're like, you know, hey, they keep challenging me, right? So, but yeah, I think your point is one of the big ones is that, you know, the screen gets cluttered at some point, right?
Yeah.
With the more information you have, you know, I'm trying to remember, there used to be a comedy bit. I don't know if it was Saturday Night Live or something like that, where they did something where, you know, because I think Fox Sports, you know, when they started doing sports, they just started putting all kinds of graphics on the football screen, right?
Right.
And to the point where you couldn't even see the announcer anymore. It was graphic on top of graphic on top of graphic. So I think that's a big thing, is it just gets too complicated. I mean, obviously, you're trying to get the information. I mean, it's even funnier now. I mean, when you go to a sports bar and you're watching, you know, like an ESPN, right? You got to scroll across the bottom. You sometimes got to scroll down the side. I mean, it was coming up. And then you got the guy in the middle. And then maybe even a preview of it's too much, right?
Yeah, it's too much.
So I think that's part of it. But the other thing, too, is that, you know, on this trip, I got to talk to Kirk Fowler, our TV extraordinaire that does the Windy City Poker Championship. And I suspected I knew the answer to this, but I wanted to ask him. See, that's the extra mile we go here at Anti-Up. We don't just give you our stupid harebrained opinions. We actually go try to find professional harebrained opinions to give you as well. And he did confirm what I thought, is that it's really a post-production expense that just can't be justified at this point. So, and Bob is right. He's like, you know, I don't get this. I mean, it's just, you know, another graphic to put on the screen. Well, you know, as you and I know from doing, you know, the voiceovers and stuff for the shows we've done for Kirk, the post-production is where the cost comes in this. You know, you've got all the, you know, doing the script, redoing the script again, and then actually having to manually enter the cards and pots and all that kind of stuff. It takes a lot of time, a lot of man hours to actually make that work. And every time you add something more, it takes more man hours, and that costs more money.
Yeah, exponential.
And then the other thing, too, is, I mean, obviously, I think one of the disconnects here is when you're playing on you know, an online site and you're using a HUD or something like that, that stuff is already programmed, you know, so it automatically does all the calculations and pops it up for you, right?
Right.
That doesn't exist on a TV screen, you know, that's going to be, you know, either somebody's got a computer program it to automatically have it pop up in post-production, or they actually have to manually enter all that information. And anytime you do manually, that's when the cost just gets outrageous. So it sounds like it's and then, of course, you know, when the cost gets big, who's going to pay for that, right? And that's why you're seeing less and less poker on TV now, is because, you know, that online money's dried up for the most part. They used to pay for all the shows. Sponsors still aren't paying as much for them as well, and then poker rooms don't have the money they used to be able to pay for this. So then if you go to them and say, hey, we've got a great idea, we want to clutter the screen with a lot more admittedly very useful information, can you give us another $20,000? And then when the laughter subsides, you're like, okay, I just had to ask because Bob asked. So I think that's really it. It's a combination of being too cluttered and too expensive.
I also think there are other things. I think that if you can recall when the horse championship was first televised, the first year, and they didn't keep it to No Limit Hold'em, and they kept putting up like all the Raz cards, and they kept putting up all the Stud 8. It's too much for you. You're trying to watch TV and entertain yourself. You're not trying to learn how to be a better poker player when you're watching it on TV. So when you got these other, you know, instant stats that are put on your screen, like when you're playing online, that's a totally different thing. You're using that to make money, and you understand what all that stuff means because you got the program. On television, for the first few years, they kept telling you how to play Hold'em in the beginning of the show. You get two cards, they blew a flop, and they finally got rid of that because finally the whole world, they figured if you're watching, you figured out what this game is. But they are not going to explain what all those stats and all these graphics are going to mean every single show, especially if you're going to start cluttering the screen with all of them.
Right.
You know,
right.
And when you tune into television, you know, like even now, the only time I watch like movies that have those story notes at the bottom are movies I already saw, because I already know that movie. I already know what's going on in the movie. I want to see the interesting behind the scenes stuff. But if I haven't seen the movie, that stuff just distracts me, annoys the hell out of me.
Right.
Same with poker, right? If you got poker, you know what I mean? If you want to watch and be entertained, that's cool, but I don't want to be sitting there staring at, you know, and then also I missed the joke that the guy said at the table, or I missed the advanced play that he made, or something. So I think a combination of all those things is probably just more of the KISS method, keep it simple, stupid kind of thing, you know, and I think that's, you add all that together and it's probably the real reason why.
Well, and the other thing, too, we got to remember, this is tough for probably our listeners to reconcile in their brain, but poker on TV really isn't designed for poker players.
Right.
It's designed for people that aren't poker to get them to stop flipping channels and say, oh, what's this? Yeah, well, this is a game my friend plays. Let me watch it. So, you know, it's not really designed for folks like us where we're looking for all that, you know, analysis and extra information. So once you start putting stuff like voluntarity and pot up there, and you're right, you have to explain it, and it's going to be on the screen, and you can't keep explaining it. And certainly not when there's percentage change, you got to explain all that as well, too. It ends up making the whole broadcast probably more interesting for hardcore poker players, but far less interesting for recreational players or non-players. And then let's also remember what really made poker on TV go, and that was the multiple cameras, right? Where you could focus in on the eyes and see the sweat beating down and really see the complicated decisions that players are put to. I mean, if you have these one camera shows, kind of crack me up because you don't get any sense of that, right? It's six guys sitting around a table playing cards, boring, right?
Right, right.
It was when they were actually able to make it emotional that people got caught up into it. And when you're trying to focus on that, you're right, anything else you have on the screen is distracting from that. And obviously there's probably not enough room to do it as well, too. So you got to remember who the audience is.
Yeah, and just two quick more things about this. One, you know, all of those stats and everything that you get in your computer program, it's because all those hands are being tracked. You can't track everyone's hands for an entire tournament or an entire career. It's impossible to have half that information.
Right, you'd have to have that information on a side program.
Yeah, and there's just no way you could do that, because they'd have to show every card that they've played for their entire, so then you're just limiting the stats to that one final table.
It's just going to be outrageous.
Yeah, there's just no
outrageous data collection that's automatic online, but not automatic.
And then the final thing I'll say is that, you know, like we always said, they're watching a final table that takes 12 hours, and they're boiling it down to 1 hour. Every second of that 1 hour is precious, either whether it's precious because of advertising they pay for it or because they got to squeeze it all in. The last thing they want to do is take a 2 or 3 minute segment every single week and say, here's what these numbers mean and why we did them. And, you know, you just can't waste that time on that show. So all those things combined, I think, are the real reason why. Pretty simple, really.
Yeah.
All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com and we'll have Anteup Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is J-Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Anteup. Check out J-Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. This comes from Dazam. He says, I was in a cash game, an all-in and a call on the flop. The all-in player had two pair with ace-10. I was in this game? And the caller had ace-queen with just a pair of aces.
I was in this game?
You were in that game. We're both in this game. You don't play ace-queen. The dealer took each player's hand and placed them above the flop, like you see on TV, when the players are all-in. No queen on by the rivers, and Mr. All-In is declared the winner. But I believe the caller has hit a flush to the ace. The board was all red, so it was hard to tell. While I'm checking the board, the hands are mucked and the pot is pushed to the all-in player. My questions are, should I have said something even though I wasn't certain? Should the dealer be repositioning the player's whole cards while the hand is live, therefore removing the player's ability to protect their hands? Would it have made a difference if I said something after the hands were mucked, but before the board was mucked, as the mucked hands were easily identifiable? And should I play somewhere else where the dealers know what they're doing?
All right. Well, we didn't need to bother Sam with this one. We got enough other calls, floors that he's working on right now. So I think we can handle this, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Right? Yeah.
Well, fine. I guess the readers will judge, right? But I would say, number one, should I have said something even though I wasn't certain? The answer to that is always yes.
Yep.
There's never a bad thing about saying, whoa, hey, slow down. I think that's a flush. I mean, obviously, the worst thing can happen is that they'll look at it and say, no, you're wrong, right? And you get a little egg on your face. But, you know, I would think, obviously, as embarrassing as that could be from some players, lots of other players would appreciate the fact that you're looking out for them, right?
Right.
Except for that one guy. So, yes, always say something, even if you're not certain. Then I would say, should the dealer be repositioning the player hold cards? I'm actually surprised this is the first time we've seen this. I see this a lot in tournaments now, everywhere I play. I guess everybody seems to think it used to be TV because you want to get the cards in the TV frame, but lots of places are doing this now. And I think I'm going to dispute the fact that by doing that, the dealer makes it harder for you to protect your hands. I think they're actually making it easier for the entire board player, all the players in the hand are at the table, to see both cards and sweat them. And gives a better opportunity, like in this case, for them to see mistakes that are being made. Right. You know, catch that flush that the all-in player or the dealer didn't see. So, your hand is still live until it's mucked. And most of the rooms I see that do this, if it's a really good dealer, will slowly, you know, take the hand that they think is losing, tap it twice before they muck it. So at that point, that's like, you know, almost like the warning bell. Hey, getting ready to muck this.
Yeah.
Speak now or forever hold your peace. And it doesn't mean all dealers do that, but I don't think this is really removing the player's ability to protect their hands. You know, you could still say something, or reach your hand across without touching one and say, whoa, hey, slow down. And then three would have made a difference if I said something after the mucked. Again, I mean, you're always better off saying something. The hand was mucked, and that's going to be a floor call. You know, the floor is going to come over and see whether they're identifiable. I think at that point, other players are going to be able to confirm what's been out there, right?
Yeah.
It's part of the reason I'm putting it in the middle so everybody can get a better view of it. And if that's the case, again, if you use Sam's logic that he always does, you know, we want the proper winning hand to win the pot. We don't want pots to be paid off on technicalities when we can avoid it. I would think floor would be able to award that pot correctly at that point. But you don't know unless you ask. So
Yep. Definitely
ask. And then his last question, we've all played in rooms where dealers aren't great. So obviously, I think two things. I think you've got a responsibility to talk to management when you think the dealers are not up to snuff and give them an opportunity to get those dealers trained or get better dealers in. But, yeah, consistently, if you're going to a room where they're doing stuff that you're not comfortable with, you know, you're the customer. Go somewhere where you are comfortable.
Yeah, just a couple of things I'll say. One, it was kind of odd to me that they did this with the cards, though, because it was a cash game. if it was a tournament, I can see it because it's a tournament and they're making it visible.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about that.
Cash games, I don't even show my cards unless I have to. You know, some people do. Some people want to rub it in.
Yeah.
So I don't even know why that was even part of it. I would keep my cards, no matter if I'm all in or not. The other thing is that I think if you do have them displayed like that, and it's obvious, and somebody brings it up before the hand is dealt, they could go to the eye in the sky.
Oh, certainly. I mean, so they always could, right?
Because that's why you should always say something no matter what time you say it. You know what I mean? As long as it's not the other hand isn't being dealt, if you're still within the hand's parameters before it's shuffled and all that crap and it can still be redone or looked at, you have to say something, I think, because that's your obligation. It's part of the rules most places that you play. So
yeah, you go back to that Beau Rivage rule that's actually printed on their house rules, yep, that our players are responsible for protecting each other at the table. So
absolutely. So, but yeah, it was kind of bizarre for me. I didn't want to interrupt you while you were talking, but it was kind of bizarre to me that the cash game hands were not only taken but then put up like that. It would be one thing if it was a tournament, but
very good point. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
All right, we got a brand new O'Malley's move. Let's get to it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're in a 2-5 No Limit Hold'em cash game. The action is pretty solid, except for one maniac, and we're usually going to the flop two-handed. We have 600. The blind's post, and it's folded to us in the MP with the ace of clubs, queen of diamonds. We make the table standard raise to $20. The MP directly to our left calls, but everybody else folds. He's the maniac and sits with around 750. He will literally play any two cards. With about $40 in the pot, the flop comes the ace of hearts, queen of spades, three of diamonds. This is a very good flop for our hand. We decide to slow play him a little bit and check. The villain makes a $25 stab at it, which we raise to $50. After a little thought, he calls. The turn is the five of spades. With $140 in the pot, we lead out for $80, and once again, we get called. The river is the nine of spades. I'm not sure this card scares us much. We decide to fire another round. With about $300 in the pot, we make it $200 to go. Our opponent shoves. So, we've committed half of our stack to this hand. What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week comes from Mark from Canada. It's a Canadian-themed show today, Chris.
I think that's your doing. I think that you look for themes and stuff, so you're picking out the stuff that makes sense instead of it actually just being a natural, wonderful
theme.
Hey,
it just came up with a queue.
I'm sure it did.
A queue being like your European term for line, right?
Yeah.
Alright, so this is from a Poker Stars One Table Sit and Go, and he says, remember those?
Yeah.
Sticking a knife in it, twisting. Twisting all those Canadians. 350 buy-in, single table, crappy no limit, hold'em. So I give him credit for at least realizing it's crappy. You should play something else, don't try the Badoogie. This is not the level I'm used to be playing at, but this is the level where mistakes are made on a more consistent basis, and I really need to rack up some wins for my poker self-esteem. So he's poker slumming, Chris.
Nice.
All right, so he's played for a while in this thing, and we are past the money bubble, and we are three-handed. Blinds are 100, 200, no antes. And we are in the small blind with 5,525 in chips. We are the chip leader. The villain in this hand is the big blind with 4,094 chips. And then the last guy is 3,881. So that kind of gives you a sense of where we are chip-wise.
Okay.
We're in the money, so it's just a matter of how much more money we can win out of the sin go, right?
All right.
The button folds, and it's on us, and we look down small blind with two black kings.
All right. Let's see. We want to get value for this hand. We don't want to scare him off. This might even be one of those hands where you might consider limping just because. But if the guy, you know, the guy's a, you know, if he's a defender or if he doesn't believe us, we had a history with this guy in the last few hands, or he doesn't believe what we're doing and thinks we're just raising and taking it because it's three-handed or something like that, then you might consider raising. So there's still a lot of, you know, intangibles here that I don't know about this particular field or against. But generally, you know, I wouldn't mind limping with it and trying to see if this guy would try to steal it from me or surprise him with it, so that you can get crafty with this kind of a hand. But if we're being ABC, you know, we'll make it like two times the big blind to try to really get him to come along, or two and a half or something.
Yeah, I love when this happens because, you know, no one puts you on a hand in small blind, right?
Right.
And, you know, one of the things I've been looking at since I've been playing tournaments recently is how you play the small blind, whether you just fold if you don't have anything, whether you limp and hope that you outflop your opponent, or whether you raise and try to take it down there. And I think long term, I think I've decided raising is positive EV. Right. I haven't done the math on it yet, but... So the fact when you get something like this, it's golden, right? So, you know, it, particularly if you've consistently raised from a small blind, which when we get down three-handed here, and I think we're five, six hands into this, so, I mean, people are starting to get an idea, and obviously you've been four-handed for a while, I think. People are getting an idea of how you play the small blind now, I think, right?
Yeah.
So if you've been consistently raising here, this is exactly what I like, because now, you know, they can't put you on anything, and you've got this monster. If you haven't been consistently raising, I think it's tough now because now I think you got to raise, right? And then it's just going to look fishy and maybe you're not going to get paid off. So, again, I think with anything in poker, I think this is why consistency is so important, particularly in sit and goes. Sit and goes, I think, are so much more scientific than art form.
Uh-huh.
You know, setting people up and then not having them have any kind of tells on you whatsoever from betting or anything like that. So if you did that, which I don't know if we did, I'm going to make my standard raise here, which is, you know, 2.5x, and probably going to get called because he knows I've been doing this all day long, and he doesn't know that I've got a hand now.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, is you don't want to do anything out of the norm, because if it's out of the norm, they're going to think something's up. So that's the best way to go in, I think. If you've always limped every single time, then you might want to consider limping because he's never going to put you on king-king, and then maybe he tries something and re-raises, or
that's,
you know,
true.
Or you get value for your hand. So whatever you've been doing, you might want to consider doing again just because of the craftiness that you could
exactly.
display with this kind of a hand.
All right, our hero says, this is the best starting hand I've had three-handed, and obviously I want to get my chips in. Many players at this level will just shove all in with this holding, regardless of blind level or action before them, or whether it's heads up or nine-handed. I am not one of those players. Glad to hear that.
Yeah, I don't know a lot of
it. Play sometimes works, because it looks like, you know, hey, you're trying to protect something, and somebody's got a decent hand, they're going to call you, but shove would not work here, because our opponent's second in chips, and we're all pretty even here, so at this point, it's almost ridiculous. We're at 100, 200, too, right?
Yeah.
Somebody wants to shove, you know, unless I have aces. I'm probably not even going to call that shove with kings, because it's just ridiculous. And maybe kings, but no.
Yeah, I'm calling with a lot of hands there.
Yeah. But you know, I'm going to have a really strong hand to make that call.
Yeah.
And that's not what you want when you have kings, because, you know, one of those really strong hands that's going to insta-call you is better than you, right?
Right.
This doesn't make any sense to me at this point. I mean, if the chip stacks are different, then you can put some leverage on it and maybe get them the call of other chips and not be hurt. That'd be a different story, but... Or for sure, but right now we're in combat right now. You know, we've got three chip stacks that are all relatively the same, with small blind levels. You know, we're in for the long haul here, I think.
Yeah,
shoving is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
All right. So anyhow, our hero says, I'm not one of those players, and I want to get some value here. This villain has been all in happy since I crippled him several hands ago, but now he's come back. I doubt he'd do it again now with just any two cards. So I have to make the same 2x raise I've been making throughout this blind level, raising the 400 chips. Hoping he re-raises me all in. So points for consistency, right? That's all we're asking.
Yeah, exactly what we said. We said if you've been doing the same thing all over and over, this will now disguise your hand. So that's the right thing to do.
Yep. All right. The villain does not raise all in. He said he wouldn't be much of a hand of the week if he did. Well, you never know.
Right.
Flat calls, and we're off to the flop with 800 in the pot.
Flat calls?
Yeah, that's bad. It's a bad omen, right?
How does flat call differ from calling? I want to know. Are you telling me that he's going to win this hand? He's got a bigger hand than you? I don't know. Flat calls. Interesting. All right.
He says, on a side note, I'm still a little tilted here, and I don't want to see an ace in the flop since I'm able to go broke here if that's the case. Flop comes six of hearts, ace of diamonds, ten of spades. I guess we're tilted again.
Of course,
we're first act.
I have to admit, though, and it could be a flaw in my game since I have many of them, but I'm never afraid of the ace here. I'm just not. I mean, we only min-raised. We did everything
never
we've been
afraid?
Doing. Not in this spot.
Not as afraid as some people.
No, I'm never afraid
You're
in
never
this
afraid.
Spot. Not in this right. spot. If it was nine-handed and I had raised and someone had called me, and then I'm worried about it. But three-handed, he's got to have one of the three aces. And, you know, this guy's been calling, you know, we've been raising min the whole time. It's not, if he re-raised all in, it might be something where he had an ace or something. But even then, we're still calling with free-flops. So I'm just not afraid of the ace. I think if he had an ace in his hand, he might have re-raised this because he's been doing that all along. I am never afraid of the ace in this hand. Sorry.
I will not be as confident as you, but I get the gist of what you're saying, and yeah. I'm far less concerned about the ace than I am. But
yes.
I still have a little fear because we raised and we got called. So, and blind versus blind, and, you know, people are going to call with weak aces all the time in that situation, I think. So.
I think they would re-raise, though. That's the thing. I feel like, especially this guy.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. That's probably a good point.
I'm never afraid of that ace, buddy. I'm going full steam ahead.
Yeah, that's black and white.
That's right.
You've gone to the other side of our listeners.
That's right. No shades of gray here.
The black and white camp.
There are no more depends for me. I'm a young man.
All right. Well, our hero says, ugh, this just sucks. In fact, my exact words are three words we can't say on the show. and we are first to act. So, obviously, if you're not scared, right, you're going to be firing what? 400-600 here?
Yeah, I'm going to be betting 2/3 of the pot. At least 500, but probably 6. I mean, I don't care about that ace. Until he proves to me that he had an ace and he didn't do a preflop, I can't not bet here. You know, what do I do? Check and let him bet and then cower because he made a bet and I have to believe he has an ace? It's amazing how many people think they're psychic when something bad happens, but they don't. They never understand the hand when something good happens. You know what I mean? It's
true.
Like, oh, there's no information. I don't know. But then the minute something could possibly go wrong, they all turn to pessimists. And you know what I mean? And their perfect psychic reading, hand reading ability that they have to have an ace there, and that's why they fold. No way. I'm betting the way I'm supposed to. I'm representing, and I've got. Because how does he know I don't have an ace, too? You know what
right,
I mean? So
exactly.
A lot
I was going to say, what really bolsters your case is the fact that I think people forget the fact that we can see our own cards, but our opponents can't.
Yeah.
And we raise preflop, so there's every reason in the world to believe that this flop hit us hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of what your history is. I mean, if you've seen us playing light, then you may not believe you have that ace, and his weak ace might be good, and then you're in trouble. But other than that, you know, let him believe he had the ace.
Yeah, I'm betting 600.
All right. So I don't think it's a big deal right now. I guess we'll see how the hand develops. But I'm curious when you're three-handed like this, these standard bet ranges still apply. In other words, you know, I think there's a couple cases here. One, this guy totally missed his flop. We've been the aggressor, and we bet anything he's going to fold, almost anything. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then I think we're needlessly wagering 200 more than we should. You put 400 out there and accomplish just the same thing as 600, right? Now, if our goal is to get more value and we think he's going to call that 600, then we're losing value by not betting the 600 rather than the 400, right?
Right.
So, I don't know. I guess that's one of the calculations I'm going to be doing here, which is different than if I'm at a full table, like, level 2 or something, where obviously I'm always going to be betting 2/3 of the pot here.
You going to compromise then? You know, if you think it's
I'm
one or the other,
maybe
you go 500?
400. Well, I'm not. It's online, so I'm never going to go an even number. I'll do 399.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know whether there's... I guess it just depends. I mean, I'm not saying what I would do because I don't know. I don't have the history of this guy.
Right.
But, you know, if he's tended to fold it a lot post-flop, then I'm not going to wager more. Because, you know, what happens if he raises here, right? Now we got to try to figure out whether he's just trying to make a move on us or whether he has an ace. And if he has an ace, then I'm not excited about continuing, right?
Right.
That's what we decide, because then we're drawing dead to two kings or runner straight. If we can't make that determination, decide to call and continue to fight... we still got two more decisions to come up. So I think if I can bet the least amount that's going to accomplish what I want, then I'd be fine with that. And I would say with an ace on board, I might be happy with just taking this pot and moving on.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways you can go with it. Since we don't know so much about the villain, I always revert back to ABC, which to me is still 2/3. That's just how I feel about it. You know what I mean? Until if he told me a whole bunch of stories about this guy and history and stuff, then I might tailor my betting to keep him strung along. But with this, you know, with this ace out there, with me taking the... It just wouldn't look weird if I didn't bet. So if a blank comes on a turn and then I bet, he's not going to call. And if I bet a little, you know, he might think it's suspicious too. And the other thing too is, if you bet a little and he calls and he picks up his Broadway on the turn or his two pair on the turn, now you didn't make him at least pay for it. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of things that come into play here. But since we don't really know a lot about him, I will stick with the 500 to 600 bet.
Okay. All right. So here says, I can't let this ace scare me. So he's right there with you, Chris.
Yeah.
I've seen a great many players at the level who will never call a bet at this stage with an overcard on the board, and I'm hoping this villain is one of them. Make a pot-sized bet of 800, probably a little bit more than, well, probably twice as much as that I would have done, and more than you.
Yeah, more, that's a whole pot.
I'm trying to represent the ace and betting that he doesn't have one, hoping to shut down the action right here. Villain flat calls again, Chris.
Flat calls! It's not good.
No, I think even if he just plain old called, this would be bad, right?
Yeah.
Because now we're in the situation of, now we have to figure out, it's a game of chicken, right? We got to figure out whether he has an ace or whether he's floating us, thinking we don't have an ace, which we don't, obviously, but we got a bigger hand. You know, if we don't have an ace, we got the best hand, probably.
Right.
And we're out of position, which sucks, right?
Right.
So this is tough. It'll be a gut check time on the rest of this hand, I think. All right, the turn is the Jack of Diamonds. So our board now is Six of Hearts, Ace of Diamonds, Ten of Spades, Jack of Diamonds. So puts Broadway out there and adds a flush draw. And I guess obviously gives us a straight draw as well.
It does give us a gut shot to Broadway. It completes a Broadway. Somebody happens to have it. I don't know if they would have called that 800 with a gut shot, but maybe they do. Maybe they're floating and in a gut shot. I think we got to keep up the strength here. I feel like just because, I mean, how many cards come off the turn that aren't scare cards now then? You know what I mean? I mean, really, it has to be somewhere in the 7, 8, 9 range.
True.
You know what I mean? So anything else could help, you know, and you know you're going to pick up some sort of flush draw now on the turn, so you want to protect against that. And I don't know. I just feel like I have to bet one more time at least here, especially if he's floating. If he's floating me and I don't bet, he's going to bet. And if he bets too much, I have to let it go, and I don't want to have to let it go. I've taken control. I say I have the ace, and I'm betting. If I bet again, if I had an ace, would I bet again? Yes, I would bet again. So I have to represent it like I have it and see what he does and see. You know, he could be crafty in floating me. So I need to bet to see if he's floating. If he just calls again, then I'll make the decision on the river. But if he, you know, if he's really floating me, he would raise here no matter what I do. So, I and if I don't bet, he's definitely betting. So I think I got to bet again. Probably a little less than half the pot or half the pot.
I'm not convinced that he's going to bet again here. I mean, he could be wanting to see what we're going to do. The fact that his call is going to give him a free card if we check and let him check behind. There's a lot of checks on turns that happen in tournaments these days. So I don't like the situation we're in. And beyond that, I'm not trying to be a wuss with my king-king here and be scared about everything. But, again, we're in a sit-and-go here, and these chips mean a lot now. So what I don't want to do is get in a situation now where I get sucked in this hand and have to call off the rest of my chips at some point here when we're three-handed at 100, 200 with each of us with 90,000 big blinds, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we put 800 in. What we raise as? Oh, we put 1,200 in, so we're down to 4,300. We're still in second place if we have to fold here. So I think at this point I'm going to slow down and hope I get a free card and then be able to catch up. And if he bets again, you know, maybe I'll just give him credit for outplaying me out of position. But I don't want to get in a situation where I'm going to go out of this hand now with an under pair and I'm in a lot of danger that can come on the river.
Well, I think that if I check and he bets, then there's no way to know what happened there. Did he have an ace? Did he float?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So I think I need to put something out there defensively. I very rarely online, to me, I very rarely remembering it going check on the turn when someone's in position and they're calling a big bet on the flop. That's the biggest bet you can make without overbetting. You know what I mean? I mean, he bet 800. And so for him to call the 800, either he has something. I mean, he's drawing to something or he's floating. So this jack does both now. It completes something he could have drawn to. He's picked up a draw if he has diamonds. Or, you know what I mean, he was floating us. If he had the ace, I don't feel like he would call there. I feel like he would have raised preflop or he would have raised there. It just feels funny to me that if we check, I don't think this guy could ever check here. I think he would have to bet, especially since he was pretty crazy before this hand even started. So I can't give up control of this hand yet. I have to see what happens. If I check and he bets, I mean, what do? Check call? I mean, if it's a reasonable amount, I check call, then why didn't I bet that amount? So I just think I should put some sort of defensive bet out there, like 1,000 or 1,200.
Okay. So at this point, that gets us down to about 2,000. So the rest of the hand is pretty much all in or fold, right?
Well, didn't you say we were at 4,000?
Well, 55. I'm sorry, actually, you're right. 55 before the hand. So when we put in 1,200, and if you put another 12, it's 24, right? So, or another 1,000. So, yeah, I guess.
And then it's only 100, so. 200 with no antes. If I had 3,000, I'd have 15 big blinds three handed. So
I think you're right.
Yep. Yeah, I got to bet something here.
Okay. So, our hero says, this card just sucks. I now have to disregard the other kings as outs, though I do pick up four tens for a backdoor straight. Do I think he has an ace? I really have no idea, but I have to imagine he's hit this flop with something now that he called. The other problem is that I'm out of position. I don't know if I can lay down kings just yet, but I can't lead out anymore either. I check exercising what little pot control I have.
Yeah,
I think you talked me into how that was wrong. So
yeah, I don't agree with that. But
the villain bets half the pot, 1,200.
Yeah, see, no, this is what you have to believe, that he was floating you, or that he made his straight and he's protecting against the flush. Did he really make a straight here? I mean, he could have had jack 10 and made two pair, and he's betting it. He could have called, believing we didn't have the ace, believing we didn't have anything, and so he hit his 10 on the flop, and now that's why he called, and now he's made two pair and he's betting and for value and protecting. You could put him on that. It's a very specific hand, though. He could just. I think it feels like he's floating us. That 800 call. I don't think he's calling to make. He could have been calling to make two pair, or he didn't believe us. That's very possible. You know, he could have think we had something like eights and could have succumbed to, you know, something like ace. You know, any ace, any ten, whatever. So, but we showed strength and he called anyway, and now he's betting out. It feels a lot like a float to me, but I don't know. Again, I don't know this player. I don't know anything, but it feels a lot like a float with some sort of draw, because now he could have any king or any queen and have a draw to, you know, a backdoor draw that if he gets called here, he can still make his hand. I don't know. I think I would call, because I might have bet that much anyway. So
yeah, I mean, I guess that's the point that I would make, is you're talking about betting 1,000 anyhow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would be different if we checked and let this guy, like, shove on us, and then we would have to been, you know, tough decision. But he's essentially betting what we were going to bet anyhow. You know, 200 is almost meaningless at this point. So
yeah,
if you were willing to bet out 1,000 here, I think there's absolutely no reason why you wouldn't make this call.
Yeah, so I'm going to call, but I hate that I've now showed weakness, and I could have shown strength and paid the same amount. That's what bothers me.
Yep.
So,
although had we bet 1,000, he might have raised us.
And that's true. That's absolutely true. But I don't know. You know, it's just a suspicious bet to me. It feels like he's playing us here. I don't know why. But I'm gonna call the bet and then hope the river is a blank, and then I can maybe make a defensive bet to control the pot and whatever. But it feels like he's playing us here.
All right, so our hero says, this bet just sucks. This could mean an ace, or he could be representing that ace like I just did. Yet somehow this bet seems rather low. I think I can actually afford this. I've got 43.25 now, and it would leave me 31 behind if I call, which is more than enough to make a comeback. Because really, you could make a comeback with 144 chips, right? A little nice history there. And I'm still not entirely convinced he has that ace. Go back to the hand an earlier hand he played. And so I don't think he's switching up his game here. I kind of think I'm ahead, and a call here could still represent the ace and scare him away from betting the river. So I make the call, but I don't think I have it in me to call another bet on Fifth Street. Hopefully I won't have to.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Is again, even if you check the river, if he would have to be... why would he shove the river? You know what I mean? So you got to think he might make a defensive bet. The only way he would shove is if he's bluffing, it feels like. So I think that we need to just call and maybe I might make a bet on no matter what comes on the river, unless it's something really scary. But all
that's
right,
a good point.
What's the river?
Yeah. All right, the river is the seven of hearts. So our final board is something. Six of hearts, ace of diamonds, ten of spades, jack of diamonds, and now seven of hearts. So that seven really doesn't do much of anything, right?
No. Here's the deal.
I guess, if you got an 8-9 or something, you got lucky with a straight, but that's about it.
I feel like, if I check here, it's not that weak because you're trying to control the pot.
And we've shown the fact that we keep calling, right?
Yeah, so that we can call.
And he's going to have to make a pretty big ballsy bluff to get us off his hand, I think, at this point.
Yeah, so. And even so, if he shoves, it seems kind of suspicious to me, too, because why shove if you've got the best hand? You want to get something for it. And if you had the best hand, really the best hand is king-queen. You know what I mean? You really have king-queen there? It's just a... You go back to pre-flop, you feel like the guy might re-raise you with an ace or king-queen. And would he really call a gut shot bet of 800 unless he was just floating you with backdoor outs? You know, it just feels a lot like a float. So maybe you do check and hope he bluffs at it. Or if you check and... You know, because you're really just, what's the point of betting here? If it's defensive and you hope that he sees that and only calls because he's now afraid that you had something, you know, if that's the kind of player he is, then you might make a smallish bet. But I'm not going to shove here or anything. I mean, it's just crazy. So it's either check or a smallish bet, to me, is the right move here. And then if he comes over the top, depends how much you come to the top of your smallish bet. If you check and then he just makes an average 1,000 or whatever, even then, I'd still have 2,100. I still have 10 big blinds three-handed. If I double through once, I'm chip leader again. So
right. Yeah.
I have to probably... I might just check here, believe it or not. I mean, if anything, I might make some smallish bet, like 600 or something, to see what he does with that.
I suspect if we check here, he's going to make a similar bet to what he did last time.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be a little bit more, but I don't think it's going to be a bet that we can't call. And I do worry that if we bet and then he raises, it's going to be more. At this point, I think we're really trying to be careful on how many chips we leave ourselves behind if we have to make this call.
Yeah.
And you're right, if it's 2,000, then I'm comfortable. It's 10 big blinds, I can shove. If I get called, then I'm right back in it. And really, I might not even have to shove ever. I mean, I could be able to pick up a couple blinds and get right back in it, right?
Yeah.
If I get below that, though, then I think it gets more difficult, because if you get below that 10 big blinds, then... You know, you open up the range of calling range for your opponents to knock you out of this tournament, and it's going to be much harder for you to play.
You have a very powerful stack if you have 2,000 chips in this situation, because if you keep shoving it, they have to have a hand to risk 50% of their stack or even more.
Exactly.
And they're not going to do that when they're already three-handed. Yeah. So
it's a big difference.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. I think every chip counts here. So I think I'll gamble here that this guy is not going to bet decidedly more than what he did on the turn. If he was just bluffing the whole way, he might now decide just to shut down,
right?
Because we didn't bet either, and hope that whatever crap he has is better than our crap. and I think if we put any bet out and we get raised, then it's going to be very tough for us at this point. So
we're both checking.
Yeah, I think I'm going to check and hope for the best. Yeah.
All right.
All right, our hero says, seven changes nothing. I don't see any point in betting here. If I get called by an ace or two pair, a set or a straight, if he's got nothing, he'll just fold to my bet. He might be inclined to call a middle pair, but I think my turn did a good enough job to represent the ace that he wouldn't risk it. I kind of like what he says here. You know, if he doesn't have anything, betting here is not going to get you anything, right?
Right, so, exactly. That's exactly right. Just like
that's
only
really all we can
hand.
Beat now, right?
Yeah.
Other than, you know, a smaller pair. That would be really risky.
Right. If he has tens and he didn't believe you had the ace, he might have just been, you know, but why would he have bet there? So.
And that's really the only thing I think we can be here outside of a bluff. So, yeah. All right, so our hero checks. I'm hoping he checks as well. And not really sure to do what he bets. I think we've already talked. Depends on what the bet is. But
right.
I'm going to gamble that it's going to be a bet that we can call. Our villain pauses for I don't know how long. Well, it can't be that long. It's online.
You're online.
and checks behind.
Oh, nice. We're ahead.
We go to showdown. My kings are revealed. Dramatic delay, he says. The villain mucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It totally felt like a float the whole way. That's got to be what it was. I mean, there's just no... I mean, unless he... I don't know what it could have been, tens maybe. But other than that, it feels like a float. And it just feels like this guy was trying to take it from us. Because really, in a sit and go, how often does, when you're three-handed like that, does a small blind when they raise really have a hand and then on top of it hit their hand. So, you know, that's why this guy was probably thinking that and was probably floating you and then didn't get away with it.
Yeah, he says, I breathe a huge sigh of relief, taking the 4,800 pot, jump back in the chip lead, and this being online poker, I, of course, immediately hit the replay button to see what he had.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot you could do that.
Yeah, I know. Remember those days?
Yeah.
Nine of clubs, king of hearts.
Oh, so he was definitely floating because he had no draw on the flop.
Not on the flop, yeah.
No draw on that flop at all.
On the turn, he ended up with a straight draw, but the same straight draw we had, but
yeah. Yeah, no draw at all, so he was clearly floating.
Yeah, again, I think it was again the situation where he didn't believe that we had an ace, so he thought, you know, he could get us off at some point, and we were stubbornly staying in there.
Yeah, wow. Very interesting. So what did he say anything else? Did he...
Absolute air, though he did have the same straight draw we had. His incredible run is over, and I can take a deep sigh of relief. The villain shoves all in preflop in the next hand and craps out in third place, losing to the other opponent. And her heads up with a decent chip lead and able to wait out my remaining opponent and win the top prize, which is $14.01 of our
dollars. Don't spend it all in one place.
Well, it's definitely not a min cash.
That's right. All right, Mark from Canada, thanks for your hand. Then it's been another good show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.